has a number of working titles, but this title is The New COINTEL Pro, Arabs, Muslims, and Southeast Asians, and Enemies of the State, meaning these are the new enemies of the state. And it should not be a surprise to any of us, considering the current developments that we are seeing taking place since 9/11 and thereafter. Before I go into this lecture, I want to remind you of next month's lecture. So there will be a following lecture next month on March 3rd, also at 7 p.m. And the topic of next month's lecture is the Empire's Embedded Intellectuals. So Empire's Embedded Intellectuals, as we have become familiar of embedded journalists, and the more accurate description should be in-bed journalist rather than embedded, considering that an empire needs a very extensive cadre of journalists that are ready to call people to march to the drumbeat of empire. And as such, I would like to have a parallel track with the journalists who are doing the bidding for the empire to speak about the intellectuals who have been also doing much work in behalf of empire, conjuring up dreams of grandeur of students in many places as well as practitioners. Bernard Lewis, not least among them, who has been at it for quite some time. And you would think that he should have stayed in the Turkish archives doing his work in Ottoman text, but he continues to venture to speak and give pronunciation upon the much of the Middle East, a place where he has not actually set foot except in a few places. And if the expertise these days that we are taking from such individuals would be appropriate, you would think that pilots might be the best experts in the world, because at least they land in every airport and they have a far more understanding of at least the food and the habits of people in those countries. So this is at least a preview of the topic of next month's lecture. And the intent of these lectures is to begin having a greater discussion about what we are facing at this particular time, considering that we are in a period of heightened concern for civil liberties as well as criticism or critique of empire. So going into the topic of today's lecture, on June 9, 2002, the San Francisco Chronicle Sunday edition had a special report titled Reagan, Hoover, and UC Red Scare, exposing the role played by the FBI in undermining the leadership and leading to the eventual resignation of UC President Clark Kerr. The Sunday report, based on recently released secret FBI files, shows how the Bureau's covert campaign to disrupt the free speech movement and topple President Clark Kerr helped launch the political career of an actor, a famous actor now, not Schwarzenegger, but Ronald Reagan. The FBI campaign helped end the successful career of Clark Kerr at UC and brought to the spotlight Ronald Reagan, whose fame was just beginning to take hold, and ending in being the flag bearer for a resurgent right wing as a two-term Republican president in the 1980s. More recent revelations point to Ronald Reagan being an FBI informant at even an earlier stage of his career, when he served as president of the Actors Union at the height of the Hugh and the McCarthy era hearings, whereby naming names of individuals having communist connections in Hollywood. So at least Ronald Reagan began snitching on his co-workers in the in Hollywood during the McCarthy era, which actually helped him land in the governor office and then making it into the presidency. The operations run by the FBI against Clark Kerr and others, others deemed by J. Edgar Hoover as enemies of the state came to be known some years later as COINTELPRO, Counterintelligence Program, which at its highest targeted thousands of individuals in this country and abroad. The best definition of COINTELPRO can be summed in the following. COINTELPRO is the FBI domestic counterintelligence programs designed to destroy individuals and organizations the FBI considers to be politically objectionable. Tactics included all manner of official lying and media misinformation, systematically levying false charges against those targeted, manufacturing evidence to obtain their conviction, withholding evidence which might exonerate them, and occasionally assassinating key leaders. The FBI says COINTELPRO ended in 1971. All reasonable interpretation of FBI performance indicate it continues today a little bit under other code names. The definition speaks above of programs and not merely one operation, as many tend to assume. When some records of COINTELPRO became available after the 1975 Church Commission, the public was informed of the FBI requesting 3,247 illegal, repressive, and disruptive actions throughout the course of the program. But of those requests, only 2,370 were carried out. Only 2,370 carried out. In addition, the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover developed in 1960, quote, the Security Index and the Rabble-Rouser Index, containing the names of people to be summarily arrested and detained in the event of war, which listed at the time, quote, over 200,000 names, including writer Norman Mailer and Democratic Senator Paul Dukakis, also included in this 200,000 names index. J. Edgar Hoover, the longest-serving director of the FBI, marshaled and exercised unfettered power targeting a host of organizations and individuals that it would take a whole shelf of books just to list each one of them with a brief description. However, when we look back to the 1960s period, and even before, one of the most underreported stories to this day is the massive violations of civil and human rights by agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation under the vindictive leadership of J. Edgar Hoover, which lasted almost half a century. In reality, if you track the tenure of Hoover at the FBI helms since the 1920s, you get the picture that throughout these years, the norm was the absence of civil rights protections for minorities, labor, and anti-war activists. Up to this present day, the American public is still in the dark when it comes to the real nuts and bolts of what took place in the last century, and in particular in the 1960s, and how federal agents used their power to commit high crimes against thousands of innocent American citizens. Yet a more insulting aspect of this is that the fact that a number of buildings across this nation are inscribed with the name of J. Edgar Hoover. Also, no one really has answered to this day for the many crimes that have been committed. Rather, the often used approach of attempting to forget and offer general remarks of remorse without real substantive changes taking place. Our knowledge of the conduct of J. Edgar Hoover Agency, came to public knowledge through the initial diligent work of the Citizens Committee to investigate the FBI. So it did not come from any politician, period. It came from the Citizens Committee to investigate the FBI. When in March of 1971, they managed to remove secret files from an FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and release them to the press. Prior to the release of these documents, no concrete evidence of FBI wrongdoing was available at a very crucial period in America's political history. By 1971, public support for the Vietnam War was declining, and a variety of political movements calling for withdrawal and the end of conflict were gaining support among many sectors of the American society. Anti-war protest and mobilization, built upon long-established civil rights movement, presented a major challenge to the status quo. However, not content on leaving matters alone, President Nixon was involved with J. Edgar Hoover in a massive counterintelligence operation at home, directed at all those whom he deemed enemies, including the Democratic Party itself. Through a convergence of forces and events, a wider opening emerged and more information came to the surface about FBI practices and its operations against law-abiding citizens. Nixon's plumbers and their inept break-ins into the Watergate Hotel contributed to an opening in the American political system that by the end helped expose larger parts of FBI files, including COINTELPRO operations. Events beginning with the break-ins and other FBI missteps culminated in the Church Commission report of 1975, which actually, in the view of historian Howard Zinn, was nothing more than a complex process of consolidation based on the need to satisfy a disillusioned public that the system was criticizing and correcting itself. Meaning, any time that you have a critique, an element of an opening in the structure needs to give the public that there actually is taking steps to correct the problem. Essentially, it's a way to pacify public anger on what is occurring at the time. Even though that the system engaged in a process of consolidation, the value of what became known shouldn't be underestimated. For it authenticated for the first time that which was all along known on the streets among political activists. The FBI and Hoover were up to their necks in crimes committed against the American people. If you ask most Americans today about COINTELPRO, you would hardly get anyone who would know what it was, and some might think only of the hip-hop group using its name, this name, but for many victims of the program, it is still a reality. Consider for a moment the Black Nationalist Movement, the Chicano Brown Berets activists, and the Native American organizations targeted by COINTELPRO operations, and whether they are still living the outcomes of these events. Did the FBI have anything to do with so many African-American leaders being killed, either in fomented inner fighting or the often used shootout with police cause of death? In the 1960s, the FBI directed most of its resources at dismantling the Black Power movement with all its subgroups and ideologies. For Hoover's FBI, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Stokely Carmichael, and Elijah Muhammad represented a single threat, even though each one of them engaged in the struggle for equal rights from a different ideological prism. What brought them together in the eyes of the FBI is the possibility of developing a movement that can challenge and possibly change the American political structure. Consider the FBI directive below, sent to the attention of all offices, which, if read carefully, can be understood to give agents considerable freedom of operations in pursuit of the agency's goal, which possibly including actual liquidation. This was a directive to FBI field offices. Comes out from the Albany, August 25th, 1967. This is from the director of the FBI counterintelligence program, Black Nationalists/Hate Groups Internal Security. Quote, "The purpose of this new counterintelligence endeavor is to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of Black nationalist hate-type organizations and groupings, their leadership, spokesmen, membership, and supporters, and to counter their propensity for violence and civil disorder. The activities of all such groups of intelligence interest to the Bureau must be followed on a continuous basis. So we will be in a position to promptly take advantage of all opportunities for counterintelligence and to inspire action in instances where circumstances warrant." To inspire actions in instances where circumstances warrant. The pernicious background of such groups Their duplicity and devious maneuvers must be exposed to public scrutiny, where such publicity will have a neutralizing effect. Efforts of the various groups to consolidate their forces to recruit new or youthful adherents must be frustrated. No opportunity should be missed to exploit through counterintelligence techniques the organizational and personal conflicts of the leaderships of the groups, and where possible, an effort should be made to capitalize upon existing conflicts between competing black nationalist organizations. So whenever you had the black organizations fighting one another, much of it was also internally inspired by the FBI agents. When an opportunity is apparent to disrupt or neutralize, what is the meaning of neutralize in here? Black nationalist hate type or organizations, through cooperation of established local news media's contact, and as we know these days, the Bush administration had a number of media contracts unpaid, that these were getting contracts to tout out No Child Left Behind, as well as other efforts. Through cooperation of established local news media contacts, or through such contact with sources available to the seat of government. In every instance, careful attention must be given to the proposal to ensure the targeted group is disrupted, ridiculed, or discredited through the publicity and not merely publicized. You are also cautioned that the nature of this endeavor is such that under no circumstances should the existence of the program be made known outside the Bureau, meaning the American public, and appropriate within office security should be afforded to sensitive operations and techniques considered under the program. Now, this directive was given to deal with black nationalist organizations. Now, we cannot find in the FBI a similar directive to deal with the KKK skinheads who are actually going and still engaged in lynching, is still engaged in church bombing, and it was at a later stage that the FBI actually began to engage in following so-called real hate groups in the United States. So while you have this whole structure of the FBI directed at the African Americans who were legitimately engaged in a fight for their civil rights, we don't have, on the opposite end, real dealing with the fomenters of hate in this society, in particular skinheads and the KKK. Often what we find in the police ranks were members of the KKK, especially across much of the South, where much of the battle for civil rights were being fought. Now, a number of key elements in the above directives are critical for a proper understanding of what COINTELPRO is all about, and would also help us identify current operations, because we want to move from looking at the history to the current operations, having similar strategies. The operation was about the FBI counterintelligence endeavor to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of black nationalist hate type organizations and groupings, their leadership, spokesmen, membership, and supporters, and to counter their propensity for violence and civil disorder. Now, in terms of violence and disorder, often the FBI agent who was infiltrating the nationalist black organization was actually the one who was urging the organization to engage in violence. He was the agent provocateur that was encouraging the organization just as such to legitimize the FBI and the security agencies coming back and using maximum power, maximum strength to try to deal with them. Expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit or otherwise neutralize the black nationalist hate type organization. The FBI operations covered all such groups. As you could see that the FBI had an equal opportunity undertaking. And the intelligence was of interest to the Bureau. Furthermore, all such groups from the FBI perspective must be followed on a continuous basis, so we will be in a position to promptly take advantage of all opportunities for counterintelligence and inspire action in instances where circumstances weren't. We can say that the FBI has an equal opportunity approach in dealing with those it identifies as enemies, which at the time included almost every known black organization in America. Even though the above letter does speak of black organization, in other documents, the targets included Native American, Chicano, Asians, Arabs, Communists, Socialists, Labor, ACLU, Democratic Party, and women groups as well. In the Senate Intelligence Committee, we mentioned, the FBI admitted to officially approving a total of 2,370 COINTELPRO operations. 2,370 such operations. But it is widely known that these only represent the tip of the iceberg and don't account for the many missions not recorded altogether. The common thread among all of the organizations targeted is their readiness to take positions both domestic and foreign policy on both domestic and foreign policy issues contrary to that held or advocated by the government. On a completely smaller tangent, it did not matter whether it was a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. The operations continued unabated. When the time comes for a class action lawsuit against the government, this provides a context for it, since blacks, Latinos, Asian, Native Americans, Arabs, Communists, labor organizations, civil rights, and everyone else was targeted as a group for no other reason than being a member of a such group exercising their constitutional right to freedom of association and speech, which was violated systematically by the government and its agents. Now we need to look at the next text from the FBI. What is meant by to inspire action in instances where circumstances weren't? Other than causing splits or engaging in efforts that often resulted in the death of members of the targeted groups, how many Black Panthers were killed as a result of FBI-inspired action? Was the assassination of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King such an inspired action? Was Fred Hampton in Chicago an FBI-inspired action? We do know the facts for some cases, but for all others, no one can tell for sure. But wherever there is smoke, there is some fire. Now we look at the second counterintelligence memo from the FBI. Counterintelligence program, Black Nationalist Organization, Racial Intelligence. And this is dated March 4th, 68. I think it's in the back maybe. No, can you, maybe in here, maybe. This one in here.
There we go.
I need some light in here, though. No, there's some light here. If you could, we could turn the stage ones off. Yeah, that one. All of them. Okay, let me see if I could. Okay, prevent. So this one is also from the FBI. Prevent the coalition of militant black nationalist groups. In unity there is strength, a truism that is no less valid for all its truthness. An effective coalition of black nationalist groups might be the first step toward a real Mau Mau in America, the beginning of a true revolution. Second, prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement. Malcolm X might have been such a messiah. He is the martyr of the movement today. Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, and Elijah Muhammad all aspire to this position. Elijah Muhammad is less of a threat because of his age. King could be a very real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrine, quote, nonviolence, and embrace black nationalism. Carmichael has the necessary charisma to be a real threat in this way. Third, prevent violence on the part of black nationalist group. This is of primary importance and is, of course, a goal of our investigative activity. It should also be a goal of the counterintelligence program. Through counterintelligence, it should be possible to pinpoint potential troublemakers and neutralize them before they exercise their potential for violence. We're worrying about preemptive strikes, so here's a preemptive strike domestically. Right? Well, it's innocent until proven guilty. No, in here, you are to be neutralized before even the possibility of taking action. Next. Prevent militant black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining respectability. Right? This is a very important element. Prevent militant black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining respectability. By discrediting them to three separate segments of the community, and it's important in here because if you transit right now to Arab Muslims and Southeast Asian, you have to prevent Arab Muslims and Southeast Asian from gaining respectability, and you have to discredit them across the spectrum. The goal of discrediting black nationalists must be handled tactically in three ways. You must discredit those groups and individuals to, first, the responsible Negro community, meaning the Uncle Toms. Second, they must be discredited to the white community, both the responsible community and the liberals, who have a vestige of sympathy for militant black nationalists simply because they are Negroes. Third, these groups must be discredited in the eyes of Negro radicals, the followers of the movement. This last area requires entirely different tactics from the first two. Publicly, publicity about violent tendencies and radical statements merely enhances black nationalists to the last group. It adds respectability in a different way. So this is part of the strategy of how to neutralize, right, the group. A final goal should be to prevent the long-range growth of militant black nationalist organizations, especially among the youth. Specific tactics to prevent these groups from converting young people must be developed. Targets. This is still, we're going through the FBI memo. Primary targets of the counterintelligence program, black nationalist hate groups, should be the most violent and radical groups and their leaders. We should emphasize those leaders and organizations that are nationwide in scope and are most capable of disrupting this country. These targets should include the radical and violence-prone leaders, members, and followers. And here they list some of these organizations: Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, talk about family values, Revolutionary Action Movement, Nation of Islam, and then the directive at the end, offices handling these cases, and those of Stikey Carmichael, Rab H. Brown of SNCC, Martin Luther King, Maxwell Stanford of RAM, and Elijah Muhammad of Nation of Islam should be alert for counterintelligence suggestions. So this is at least what you get from the directive. The second directive from the FBI headquarters shed more light into the specific goals and major targets of the operations. I don't need to speak of the inherent racism contained in the text and the spirit of the above directive, because it just speaks of the whole genre of American intelligence services. It is given fact that governing the full scope of FBI operations of the past and present relative to racism. We must identify at this point the key words in the directive above, for they give exact meaning to what is being pursued presently. One is prevent the coalition of militant black nationalist groups, meaning that if you counterpose it today, prevent the coalition of Arab Muslims and Southeast Asian nationalist groups, attempt to disrupt them and divide them. Prevent the rise of a messiah who would unify and electrify the community. Once again, superimpose it, to prevent the rise of a national Muslim, Arab, and Southeast Asian figure in the U.S. that would help electrify and unify the community under one unified leadership. Prevent the militant black nationalist movement and here prevent a cohesive movement from emerging. And we could also look in terms of how the Arab Muslims and Southeast Asian likewise are being dealt with in a systematic way. Prevent militant black nationalist groups and leaders from gaining respectability, and prevent the long-term, long-range growth of militant black nationalist organizations, especially among the youth. And this is something that we are seeing in the present day in terms of prevent Arab Muslims and Southeast Asians from gaining respectability within the American society in general. Each one of these five goals have led to crimes committed against the communities involved, which, if considered in a proper court of law, would qualify as crimes against humanity. Now, some liberals or neoconservatives will jump up and say, you cannot use or define what happened as crimes against humanity, for it does not meet the criterion set under international law. Well, I agree with them on this case, and the definition might not fit exactly, which make me more than ready to offer genocide as a mild alternative, since a much more legitimate use of crimes against humanity can be used for slavery and the complete dismantling of the Native American society in this country. When we look back at what took place, then we must assess the price that the African American, Native American, and Latino communities paid with their blood and continue to pay as a byproduct of FBI and government-sanctioned operations. The FBI, with its operations, managed to remove at least two full generations of leaders, and whatever we attribute to failure in these communities presently has its foundation, yes, in early slavery and conquest, but more directly related to these operations carried out systematically against the people by government agents. If it was one or two bad apples, then one can understand. However, these were operations carried out with the specific orders across the board for all to engage in this massive violation of the Constitution, basic citizen rights, and the ability to peacefully petition one's own government for redress of grievances. The full extent of Cointel cooperation in the 1960s and 70s, early 70s, are somewhat documented, but the more recent operations are less known, which we will turn to in the next few minutes, if not more.